Welcome to the Radio Detective Story Hour podcast. You can find all of my podcasts since 2005 on the website, and while there, leave a comment at rdsh.otr.com, or you can send me an email to otrpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to send me a tweet, my Twitter account is @radiodetective. This time I want to look at the evolution of a popular radio character, Rocky Jordan. The adventure will take us to Istanbul and Cairo as we follow the adventures of this post-war entrepreneur and the dangerous adventures in which he usually found himself. Rocky Jordan had its start over radio as a 5 times a week, 15-minute serial beginning in 1945 under the title A Man Named Jordan. The production and writing for this serialized version was handled by Ray Buffum, a former newspaper entertainment writer who at the time had recently been the program director for NBC in San Francisco. I'm not just sure who the intended audience was for this series, as the subject matter was more adult with snide references to the then-defeated European enemies that seemed intended for only adult ears. Be warned that if you are offended by World War II hate phrases, some are in this episode. Yet the series was broadcast only on the West Coast via the CBS Pacific Network at 5 p.m. during part of what was traditionally called the Children's Hour, when the likes of Dick Tracy and Superman were aired. In the storyline of this daily 15-minute serial, Rocky ran the Cafe Tambourine in Istanbul. It will be obvious to the listener that the basic structure of the characterizations is based on the hit film Casablanca. Instead of Humphrey Bogart's Rick Blaine and his popular night spot in Morocco, Rocky Jordan is in Istanbul. In the radio serial, the hero is a much tougher character than Rick Blaine and seemingly more corrupt, though the episodes, like Bogart's Rick, reflect his patriotism. Jordan was played by Jack Moyles, a veteran San Francisco actor who was often heard in many of the crime drama and tough western serials of the late 40s and early 50s. His voice was perfect for this role, and he does a very good job in his characterization portrayal. During the first serialized run, the series was more of an adventure serial with Rocky fighting and outwitting his nemesis, Triflis, who became wealthy from the spoils of war. In its second run, under the eponymous title, Rocky was more of a crime solver than adventurer. According to one source, after the series was canceled in 1948, fans started a letter-writing campaign to bring it back. Moyles was back again in the role, but some of the concept had changed. The cafe had moved from Istanbul to Cairo. The writers for the second run, Larry Roman and Gomer Kuhl, used actual stories from Egyptian papers and even had the help of Andaru Bitar, who, according to John Dunning, wrote stories about Hollywood from his native Egypt. The sights and sounds described and heard were truly Egyptian in flavor, thanks to the musical skill of Richard Orant. In this new run, Rocky became just a little less tough and more friendly with the police, especially Sam Sabaya, portrayed by Jay Novello. The script styling was typical of Roman's writing. It had a first-person narration well performed by Moyles, with dialogue scenes to bring in the action. Rocky Jordan is a fun listen with its use of music, narration, and an excellent West Coast cast of veteran radio actors. Despite having a sponsor, the second run ended in 1950. A third run began as a summer replacement series in 1951. Jack Moyles was out, and the series production team hired a big Hollywood name to play Jordan, George Raft. By this time, Raff's career was waning, and his portrayal of Jordan was less than what Moyles had brought to the role, and similar to his Pepe Le Moko from the 1938 film Algiers. The series was beginning to tire, and with declining listeners, it soon left the air in 1951, despite it having moved to a national network broadcast. Larry Roman, who was principal scripter, moved on to writing plays for New York's Broadway circuit, including his play Under the Yum Yum Tree, which was later made into a film starring Jack Lemmon. One other piece of trivia is that, according to Variety magazine, Lorene Tuttle was scheduled to star along with Moyles in A Man Named Jordan. The role, however, was portrayed by Dorothy Lovett. Lovett seemed to have a broader acting profile in film, so for whatever reason, Tuttle was not cast. So here now is one episode from A Man Named Jordan, the first series, and one episode from the second run under the title Rocky Jordan.
Places in this world where intrigue and danger go hand in hand, where death and disaster are the rewards of weakness. In such places will be found
a man named Jordan. In a narrow street off Istanbul's Grand Bazaar, not far from the Mosque Velid Sultan, stands the Café Tambourine, run by a man named Jordan. The Café Tambourine, clouded with the smoke of Oriental tobaccos, crowded with humanity, alive with the babble of many languages. Rocky Jordan's faithful man Friday has just told Rocky, Duke, and Tony of a discovery made by his nephew, who is in the employ of a Spaniard named Chavez. At the home of Chavez, many strange things have been happening. Many trunks, boxes, and crates have arrived. Many strange men and women with Spanish, Swedish, and Swiss names, but with the accents of Central Europe, pass through the home of Chavez. Ali's nephew reports that the boxes which arrive, labeled merchandise, contain money, gold, precious stones, art objects, things of great value, which are hidden in the basement. Rocky, intrigued by the possibilities of profit in this information, shows interest in further investigation. His theory is that Mr. Chavez has established a station for escaping Nazi war criminals. When the others leave, Rocky drifts down into the café. And when he sees an old acquaintance, an international crook, rejoicing in the name of Triflis, he walks over to his table and says,
"Hello, Triflis. How's tricks?"
Rocky, my friend, sit down, sit down.
Yeah, thanks. I haven't seen you for some time. Where you been?
Oh, I have been away. I'm making arrangements to enter a new business, Rocky. I'm now engaged in that business.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. Anything legal enough to talk about?
Oh, Rocky. I'm afraid not. Uh-huh. But a fine occupation. Very remunerative and no risk.
Sounds good. Making any money?
Rocky, you wouldn't believe it. Such money I have never seen. I think perhaps you would be interested.
Sounds very possible. What's the deal?
It is not within the law, Rocky.
Go on.
It is an operation which helps many people. People who are in danger.
Sounds better all the time. How about a breakdown on it?
I cannot talk here, Rocky. Tomorrow, perhaps, in your office. I need a partner, Rocky.
Okay. Tomorrow at noon. Be there.
I shall be there, Rocky.
It's a deal. Well, so long, Triflis.
Deal tomorrow, then.
Hey, what's that big smile on your kisser for, Rocky?
I just had a talk with Triflis. He wants me for a partner.
Huh? Trifler's teaming up with you?
Yeah. We're going to talk it over tomorrow noon in my office. And if he's mixed up in the deal I think he is, he's going to be mighty useful, Duke. He's my pigeon.
Anything you can tell me about?
Guess I can tell you what I think. Oh, brother, I'm weary. Let's sit down over here and have a beer before we turn in, shall we?
Sounds good to me.
Oh, Akim, draw two, will you?
Yes, Effendi.
Boss, you look tired enough to call it a day. Why don't you turn in?
I'm going to in just a few minutes. Just want to relax a little bit before I hit the pad.
You know, Duke, I
think our little chum Trifless is going to be a great help to us.
Yeah. Well, it's about time Trifless was helping somebody. There's one guy that makes me sorry I didn't stay home and practice my piano lessons instead of learning to fight.
Trifless is a necessary evil, Duke. If it wasn't for people like him figuring out strange ways of making a dishonest dollar, we wouldn't have much fun.
Yeah, maybe you're right, Rocky.
Sure, I love guys like Trifless. They think they're so clever that it's like shooting fish to outsmart them.
What's the angle, boss? What's Trifless cooking up now?
Well, I tell you, Duke, since Turkey's declared war on Germany, there's a lot of embarrassment in certain circles. Know what I mean?
Yeah. This ain't a neutral country no more. And they're going to round up all the crowds, huh?
Yeah. And the Japs. Now, the Japs are just plain out of luck because a Jap's a Jap. But the Heinies are in a little better shape if they can get their hands on a phony passport.
Ah, that what Trifless is up to?
Sounds like it to me. Yeah, it all adds up, Duke. The dope we've got in this house where Ollie's nephew works, the whole thing. Nobody expected Turkey to declare war. The Germans who can get out of Germany, the rankers in the Nazi party, they've been shipping their money and their valuables into Turkey for months, waiting for the day when they have to change their names and their nationalities to beat the war guilt trials and the confiscation of the piles of dough they've stolen from the little people in Germany. Great little group, Duke. Fine little gang.
Yeah. We're going to take a shot at getting them, huh, Rocky?
Can you think of any more pleasant work?
No. Sounds like a job that could be enjoyed.
You know, Duke, these guys we're fighting here in Istanbul, they're the real heels in this war. They're the guys that stood on balconies and shouted their lungs out, selling a lot of dummies on the fact that they were members of a master race. They're the guys that gave the orders to wipe out the population of towns like Lidice in Czechoslovakia. The guys that robbed the churches and looted the towns in every country the Huns occupied.
Yeah, and now they're going to try to get away with it.
Yeah. Now, while Hitler chews the carpet and orders the soldiers and the square-headed civilians to die defending their homes and their fields, these big shots are taking a powder. They know they're whipped. They know they're slated for a blank wall and a firing squad. Well, some of them will get away with it, but we'll take care of a few, huh?
The next morning, Rocky Jordan awakens with a feeling that something unusual is going to happen to him this day. A premonition of something unfinished. As his mind clears, he remembers that Trifless will be at his office at noon. Trifless, the nondescript hanger-on who has suddenly blossomed into a man of wealth. As he is struggling with his shirt, trying to get his broken arm through the sleeve, the door to his quarters opens, and Ollie, his faithful servant, says...
What is the matter, Rocky? I heard such language.
I was just trying to get this thing...
Let me help you, Rocky. You are so impatient.
Great big boy like me having to be dressed.
Rocky, you cannot get that arm through your sleeve with the bandages on it. It's too big.
Yeah, we'll slip the sleeve then.
Yes, Rocky, I will.
Yeah, that does it.
Rocky, my nephew, the one I told you about, the one who's working as a houseboy for Senor Chavez...
Yeah?
He'll be here in an hour. You said you wanted to talk with him.
Yeah, that's right, I do.
He is most anxious to talk with you. I hope it is not too early, Rocky.
Yeah, look, hand me that brown knitted tie there, will you?
Yes, Rocky. Shall I tie it for you?
Yeah. My gosh, I didn't know how much I used that left arm of mine. Hadn't any idea what a handy thing it was. Your nephew run across any more dope that sounds interesting?
I think so. Get your chin up, Rocky. I cannot see what I'm doing.
Oh, sorry, old man.
My nephew reports that two more visitors have arrived at the home of Senor Chavez. They arrived at dawn.
Uh-huh. Come on. That tie must be all right. Let's get out of here and have a talk with your smart relation.
Here's your coat. Rocky.
What?
Where's the sling? You must have that arm in a sling.
All right, Doctor. It's over there on the dresser.
Yes, here it is.
Thanks. I don't know what I'd do without you, Ellie. You've been more than a mother to me.
You're making fun of me, Rocky.
I don't know whether I am or not.
Hey, Rocky.
Oh, for the love of Mike. Come on in, Duke. I sure get a lot of privacy around this joint. What's the matter? Am I getting fat or something? You guys figure I'm getting too much sleep?
I just came up to see if you were awake, Rocky. What's he doing here?
Duke, I came to tell Rocky that my nephew would be here soon.
This joint is paved with good intentions. Oh, well. What's the occasion, Duke?
Well, I've been out around already this morning. I thought maybe you'd need some help getting into your duds with that broken arm.
Well, Ollie got me dressed all right. Where you been, Duke?
Over to the British Embassy. Talking to Major Pettigrew.
Oh, yeah? What'd he have to say?
Well, I just sort of asked him what was going on now that there's a war on.
Well, the people of Turkey are glad that we have finally declared war on the Axis. We have a fine army, one of the finest in the world.
I don't think that Turkey's planning on taking any very active part in the war. What did Pettigrew think, Duke?
He thinks the same as you.
Hey, Ollie. Mm-hmm. How about running downstairs and having the kitchen send up a little breakfast, huh?
Yes.
You had breakfast, Duke?
Yeah, I had one early, but I'm ready for another one.
I had mine. Shall I have two breakfasts sent up, Rocky?
Yeah, that's right. Bacon and eggs, over easy. And whatever else they have, but quick.
Right away, Rocky. As soon as I get that done, I shall go get my nephew and bring him here.
Okay, Ollie. See you later.
Reason I came back, boss. Pettigrew wants to see you.
He does? What about?
Something's cooking. Something that he thinks you can handle better than his outfit.
Well, did he give you any hints as to just what?
Well, I tell you, Rocky. While I was talking to him, I just casually mentioned the fact that you were pretty sure that there were a lot of krauts here in Istanbul, passing as neutrals.
Yeah? Maybe you talked too much.
I didn't tell him anything. I was just seeing if I could get him to talk enough to do us some good.
And what'd he say?
Well, he thinks you're right. In fact, he knows you're right. He wants to work with you.
Oh, that's just fine. What do I want to work with him for? What do we need him for?
Well, don't jump down my throat. I didn't crack anything to him. All I know is that he's got some dope on a few people that he's suspicious of, and he's willing to let you use the information. Go talk to him yourself.
Okay, I will. And look, Duke, I'll do the thinking for this outfit. Don't be getting 9'5" when you're 5'9". I'll make the contacts and the decisions.
Okay, so I got out of line. I'll get back in.
That's good. Unless Major Pettigrew or any other authority of any country knows about what we're doing the next few weeks, the better off we're going to be.
Okay. Nobody's hurt.
Come in.
Rocky, when I went downstairs, my nephew was there waiting for me.
Yeah?
Senor Chavez had sent him to town on an errand, and he came by here. Can you see him now?
Yeah, I suppose so.
He is very excited, Rocky. He says that he has news of the utmost importance for you.
These are exciting days in Istanbul and at the Cafe Tambourine. With Turkey in the war against the Axis nations, many things are happening. And Rocky Jordan is going to be interested in an exciting new venture. Don't miss tomorrow's dramatic episode of A Man Named Jordan. A Man Named Jordan is written and directed by Ray Buffum and is presented every day, Monday through Friday, at this same time. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Rocky Jordan. Things had been dull around the tambourine until I got that invitation to the tent of a desert sheik. And it was a great party. The host was fine, the food was fine. And there was a dancing girl. She was fine, too. But I shouldn't have puffed on that Egyptian water pipe. Two whiffs of that, and everything went up in smoke.
Again, we bring you a story of adventure with Rocky Jordan, proprietor of the Cafe Tambourine, which stands in a narrow street off Cairo's native quarter, within sight of the Mosque Sultan Hassan. The Cafe Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men from the world's waterfronts, alive with the babble of many languages. Now, Rocky Jordan, and tonight's story, Death in the Sand.
It was all quite a setup. Rocky Jordan, the guest of honor of Sheikh Abbas Ali, in his caravan tent on the desert. But I didn't like the way the festivities ended up, with two wild tribesmen accompanied by a blonde named Diana Carrington dragging me into Cairo police headquarters on a charge of murder. I guess it all started early that afternoon. I was sitting at a back table in my cafe when a little fellow in native dress came shuffling my way.
Effendi, you are Rocky Jordan.
Who'd you expect, the Sphinx?
I am Ishmi, Effendi. I am a sand diviner.
I'll take it somewhere else, Ishmi. Try some of the tourists up front. They'll bite.
Wait, Mr. Jordan, one moment. Your future came to me as I was reading the sand. Tells of strange things for you, Effendi.
Yeah? Like what?
I will read the sand for you, Mr. Jordan. It reveals all. The past, present, and future. The first, the pure white cloth on the table.
Look, why not just skip the hocus-pocus and get to the point?
And now on to the cloth. Sand of the Sahara from my diviner's pouch.
You're going to have to clean that up, you know.
Now I take the sand so in my fingers. I let it rain down between my fingers so. The mystic sand.
All right, just keep it out of my coffee.
Isma, I see it again. A letter.
That's standard.
This letter is to Mr. Rocky Jordan. It is you. You are this man. Now, I see a trip into the desert.
Still standard.
Now, Effendi, a beautiful woman. A sleek ash blonde, like pure crystal.
Oh, you're improving. Tell me more.
I will try, Effendi. No, she is fading. But wait. No, this cannot be.
Come on, Ishmi, get to the payoff line.
No, Mr. Jordan, please, I cannot tell you this.
Keep it in English and get it over with, huh?
Very well, Mr. Jordan. I see it in the sand. I cannot mistake it.
What?
I see death.
That's enough, Ishmi. Who sent you here?
No one sent me here, Mr. Jordan. I'm only an humble sand diviner. I have the gift.
Then take it somewhere else. You'll find plenty of yokels out around the pyramids. Imshi, Ishmi, Imshi.
Very well, I will leave, Effendi, as you wish.
Little Ishmi took his sand pouch and the hurt look in his face out the front way, and I sat looking at the pile of sand on the white cloth he'd left on my table. Every time somebody comes into the tambourine with that sort of pitch, I begin wondering. And I didn't stop wondering when she came toward my table. She was beautiful, ash blonde, like pure crystal.
You are Mr. Rocky Jordan, I believe?
Why, yes. Won't you sit down?
Thank you. Mr. Jordan, I am Diana Carrington.
Well, I'm glad to know you, Miss Diana.
Oh, thank you for being informal. Rocky, I have a letter for you from Sheikh Abbas Ali. Here, open it.
Oh, sure. My dear Rocky Jordan, I would be honored to have you as a guest at my tent on the desert this evening after prayers. There's a gift for you of rare beauty. I will await your coming. Signed, Sheikh Abbas Ali. Hey, this is all right.
You will go.
Why not? I understand the Sheikh puts on quite a party.
Good. I'll pick you up here at the Tamarin at 6.
You mean you're invited too?
Certainly. Do you mind?
No, of course not. Okay, I'll be on tap at 6.
Good. I'm sure the Sheikh's gift will be a great surprise. Goodbye, Rocky.
Diana threw me a radiant smile and walked out. It occurred to me the sand diviner's reading of my future was coming true a little too fast. A letter, a crystal blonde, and a trip to the desert. I picked up the square cotton cloth Ishmi had left on the table. It was a napkin, bearing the stamp of the Heliopolis Hotel. I decided my little sand diviner had a lot more to tell me, and the quicker the better. The Oasis room of the Heliopolis Hotel is fixed up like a Hollywood B-picture set. Papier-mâché palms, an oasis made of blue glass with some sand in it. I went in and sat down. Ishmi sat at a table across the room reading the sand for a couple of goggle-eyed tourists. He saw me, jumped, and looked quickly away. And my vision was suddenly blocked by a menu the size of a Sunday newspaper. On the front cover was the picture of one of the handsomest Arabians I'd ever seen.
Your service, monsieur?
Oh, I didn't bring my glasses.
Oh, then may I suggest our specialty? Rice of the Nile, exotic nuts of Arabia, spices from India, blended into a dish fit for a pharaoh's taste.
Bring me a plate of ham and eggs.
Ah, as you wish, monsieur.
And send that sand diviner over to my table. I'm worried about my future.
At once, monsieur.
The waiter stepped over to Ishmi and whispered something in his ear, but Ishmi stayed put. I waited. I finally caught his eye and beckoned to him. Instead of coming over, he turned and disappeared down a hallway. So I got up and followed. When I reached the hall, Ishmi was gone. There were several doors, and I chose the one marked manager. Seated behind a mahogany desk was the handsome Arab whose picture I'd seen on the menu. The picture didn't do him justice. He was clean-shaven, in perfect British dress. As he stood up, he towered over me.
May I help you, sir?
Why, you the manager?
That is correct. I am Arthur Symbol.
Well, I'm Rocky Jordan, Cafe Tambourine.
I am delighted to meet you, Mr. Jordan. Please be seated.
No, thanks. Looking for a little guy named Ishmi.
Oh, our sand diviner. You will find him in the Oasis room.
Not anymore. He's avoiding me like my creditors. I don't like it.
That is indeed strange, Mr. Jordan. Ishmi has been in my employ for 6 years. He is my finest attraction.
Well, then maybe you can explain what he was doing at my cafe this afternoon.
I am sure I do not know.
I didn't mind so much his scattering sand all over my place, but he predicted my future a little too accurately.
Oh, that is understandable. Ishmi is the finest sand diviner in all Cairo. He has the gift.
They don't tell me you think he's on the level.
Most certainly. He reads the sand for me often. Ishmi has never failed to predict the future.
Huh? Well, thanks. Sorry for busting in, Mr. Symbol.
No offense, sir.
Well, as your people say, may your mother give you many brothers.
Oh, so kind of you. But one brother was plenty. Even then, she could not tell us apart.
Well, I'd love to hear about it sometime.
Now I will find Ishmi for you.
No, thanks, friend. I wouldn't want to offend such a remarkable gift. Asa Symbol's eyes narrowed for a second, then he smiled and bowed graciously as I got out. A cover-up if I ever saw one. By now, a herd of elephants couldn't have kept me away from the Sheikh's tent. So I was waiting that evening when Diana drove up in her little Austin 7. We crossed the English Bridge, honked a couple of dogs out of the way, and roared out past Giza. The road got rougher and rougher, and finally we made it to Sheikh Abbas Ali's encampment. 4 or 5 tents, camels, and goats, tethered downwind. Sheikh Abbas Ali's tent opening must have been 6 feet high, but he had to bend down to come out.
Peace be unto you.
Well, we appreciate the invitation, Abbas.
Alaykum salam, Sheikh Ali.
My house is your house. Come inside. The food is prepared.
I've heard your meals even top my blue plate special, Abbas.
I trust you will enjoy it. Seat yourselves now. Do you wish forks and spoons?
We'll take it your way, Amos.
Rocky was a little surprised that you should invite a woman as your guest, Sheikh Ali.
You see, Rocky, we at times yield to the customs of your people.
You are very gracious.
We all said Bismillah, then the sheikh gave us couscous and watched us burn our fingers eating it. There were about 5 courses, all hot. We finished eating, and then the sheikh politely suggested that Diana go to the tent of his wives. She went, and Abbas watched my reaction.
There is a reason, not for the years of Miss Carrington.
Oh, so that's it.
Rocky, you are a non-believer, but you are my friend.
That's right.
I like you, Rocky, and I can speak to you.
Sure, shoot.
I live on the desert. I do not come often to Cairo, but now that I have come to Cairo, I can speak to you.
Sure, Abbas.
Friendship is a rare thing. There are passages on the matter in the Quran.
Sure, now, what does she want to talk to me about?
Rocky, you have no wife?
Hey, wait a second.
I do not suggest that you have 2 or 3 wives such as I. But one moment, Rocky. Now, you will see something, Rocky.
Hey.
She is beautiful, no?
She is.
She dances with the grace of a palm frond. Rocky, she is my gift to you. She will be your wife.
Oh, now, wait, Abbas. Nothing doing. You're very thoughtful, but I'm just not interested.
Oh, let us not argue. We are good friends. We will smoke the water pipe and then discuss it further.
She was light brown, the color of the café con leche the Spaniards drink in Morocco. She had on the veil over her face, of course, and a little bit more. We smoked the water pipe as she danced. We sucked the smoke up through the long tube from the water in the glass bowl of the water pipe. The sucking made the water waver. I could see the girl reflected in the water in the glass bowl of the water pipe. She seemed to waver like a reflection when a stone is dropped into a pool. She tilted and wavered, expanded, contracted. I looked up. I wasn't looking into the bowl, but she was still wavering, like water. The music was a long way off. Water seemed to be getting in between us and filling the tent, the whole tent. Then I knew why. The water pipe had been drugged. And as I drifted off into dreamland, I remembered what Ishmael had read in the sand. Death. I wondered if I was the victim. As I said, Ishmi, the sand diviner's predictions about my future were coming true a little too fast, including a beautiful blonde, a letter, and a trip to the desert. I checked on Ishmi with his employer, Asa Symbol, at the Heliopolis Hotel, but didn't get any satisfaction. That evening, the blonde named Diana Carrington and I went to the desert tent of Sheikh Abbas Ali. I smoked a water pipe and curtains. I don't know how long I was out, maybe half an hour. Then my senses slowly returned. Through the haze, and then more clearly, I saw Sheikh Abbas Ali still seated across from me, the water pipe still in his mouth. The music had stopped, and the dancing girl was gone. Sheikh Abbas didn't move. His chin rested on his beard. I spoke. He didn't answer. I got to my feet and moved over to him. I reached out and touched him. Then stiffly, grotesquely, he toppled over. I bent over him, and a sickening smell like ether almost set me spiraling off again. I heard the rustle of the tent flap and turned. It was Diana.
Rocky, I think it's about time we told Sheikh Ali... Why? What's the matter? Sheikh Ali...
Better not touch him, Diana. He's dead.
Dead? Rocky, what did you do to him? Why did you do it, Rocky?
I was drugged, that water pipe.
You were here with him every minute. You killed
him. Why should I kill him? Somebody must have drugged us both.
Sama!
Diana, what are you doing? Sama. You get those wild tribesmen in here.
Sama, hurry!
I want Miss Diana.
Both of you, look at your chief. Sheikh Abbas Ali is dead.
Who do this?
Rocky Jordan was here.
You?
Let go of me, stop. Diana,
hold it here.
Call off those 2 dervishes, will you? Get some sense into your head, Diana.
Now, Rocky, we'll see what the Cairo police think of murder. Samak Abdu, bring him along.
two wild tribesmen took me, one on each arm, to Diana's tiny Austin 7. We all piled inside somehow. Diana drove, and we roared into Cairo. At least it gave me time to get my head clear and have a look at things. I tried to figure Diana and Sheikh Abbas Ali. The tribesmen from the Sheikh's caravan obeyed her every command. The car screeched to a stop in front of police headquarters. The two hefty camel boys dragged me in right through to Sam Sabaya's office. Diana didn't wait for questions.
And Sheikh Abbas Ali lay on the carpet dead. And Rocky standing over him.
Jordan, kill him.
I'll do the talking, Samak.
Kill him with water pipe.
Don't be stupid. What would I have against Abbas Ali?
You were there all the time.
Yes. I told you I was drunk.
Please, now calm yourself. All of you.
Captain Sabaya, how can we be calm?
Miss Carrington. Now, Jordan, you have heard the accusation. I suggest now that we hear your version of this affair.
Well, it's about time.
Go on, Jordan.
Diana brought me an invitation from Sheikh Abbas Ali this afternoon. The Sheikh and I were friends, so I accepted. Diana drove me out to his encampment herself. He said he wanted to talk to me alone, so he sent her to the tent of his wives. Then a girl danced for us. We smoked a water pipe, and I passed out. When I came to, Abbas was dead. That's all I know.
Miss Carrington, who saw Jordan commit this murder?
Why, well, no one actually saw him, Captain Sabaya, but Rocky was there.
I was drugged, Sam. How could I have done it?
Was Sheikh Ali also drugged?
I don't know. These overgrown sand fleas didn't give me a chance to find out.
Then there is little more to be learned until the body is examined, and that we shall do at once.
But Captain Sabaya, do you think that will be possible? The Sheikh's wives may already have buried him.
I have considered that possibility, so I must leave for the encampment immediately.
Well, what about me, Sam?
Jordan, it stands to reason that you would not have killed the Sheikh and then drugged yourself. So until your accusers find greater proof, I will release you.
You're letting him go, Captain Sabaya?
Yeah. These two wolves in Sheikh's clothing waiting to tear me to pieces?
I will advise them to leave you completely alone, Jordan. Miss Carrington, I will talk to you again. Where do you live?
305 Sharia Danya.
I must ask you to stay there. And Jordan...
Sure, Sam.
Good. I may want to see you.
Fine. Just look in some dark alley. I'll be there, with a knife in my back. I didn't like the fire in the eyes of Shamak and Abdu, so I got out fast and caught a roving taxi. And I was off for the Heliopolis Hotel. Ishmi, the sand diviner, was the kickoff man in this game with death, and I wanted to know who was calling signals. It was about 11 o'clock at night when I walked into the Oasis room of the Heliopolis Hotel. Little Ishmi was still missing, so I scouted the dining room and the lobby, then I went back to the manager's office. The door was open, but the office was empty. Something caught my eye. In the center of the desk was a white cotton cloth. And sand was scattered all over everything. I picked up the cloth, began looking around. Then I found myself suddenly suspended in midair as a powerful hand held me from the back at arm's length. Asa Symbol had stopped being polite.
Why do you come here? What do you want?
Set me down, Goliath, and I'll tell you.
Now, who are... Oh, Mr. Jordan.
Who cut your chin, Mr. Symbol?
My chin? Why there?
Forget it. I'm still looking for Ishmi.
Ishmi?
Yes, your sand diviner. Come on, tell me where he is and I'll get out of here.
Ishmi is no longer with us.
Why not?
Why, he is not reliable. There were complaints.
It's not what you said this afternoon. Where does he live, then?
Unfortunately, I do not know.
He worked here and you don't even know where he lived?
Perhaps you will find him tomorrow, out about the pyramids.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, if he comes back, tell him I'm looking for him.
I will tell him, Mr. Jordan, most assuredly.
Where Asa Symbol fitted into the picture, I didn't know. There were a lot of things I didn't know, and only Ishmi could tell me. I fished in my pocket for a couple of piastres and moved outside to a beggar who frequented the corner near the Heliopolis. The first piastre paid off. I learned that Ishmi hung out in a den down in the Muxi section of Cairo. I tossed the beggar the second coin for luck and then caught a taxi. Compared to Ishmi's hangout, my Cafe Tambourine is as sedate as the tea room of the YWCA. Ishmi was there.
Mr. Jordan.
Sit right where you are, Ishmi, and get out the sandbag.
I am in no mood to read the sand. For 6 years I have faithfully served as a symbol. Now he discharges
me. Yes, I know. That's what happened between you and your boss.
Mr. Jordan, every night it was my custom to read the sand for Asa Symbol. He relied on me. I have the gift.
Sure. What happened?
Tonight I went to his office. I was ready with the sand when he came in. His actions were unspeakable.
Why?
simply because of my confession about what happened this afternoon.
You mean when you came to the Cafe Tambourine?
Yes. I have the gift, Effendi. But when this man offered me 2 Egyptian pounds to tell you those things, I could not refuse. I confessed all this to Ezra Simbel.
Wait a minute. Who sent you to the Tambourine?
Sheikh Abbas Ali.
He paid you to read my future?
Oh, yes, but I told you only what he instructed. I did not read it in the sand, Effendi.
Did Abbas Ali tell you to leave that Heliopolis Hotel napkin on my table?
No, Mr. Jordan. That was my mistake.
Yeah. You bungled the job, Ishmi.
I am most furious man, Mr. Jordan. Look, if you please. This menu I brought with me from the Oasis room. Read what he says about me.
Yeah. Heliopolis proudly presents Cairo's foremost occult specialist, Ishmi, the sand diviner, with a personal endorsement and affection of Asa Symbol.
You see? Now he throws me out, like a rat into the desert. I am most angry.
Yeah, yeah. Who's Diana Carrington, Ishmi?
I know I have no such person. Besides, I have other... I must go.
Stay right here, Ishmi.
Let go of my arm, Mr. Jordan. Let go.
Oh, the police that scared you, huh? Hello, Sam.
Hello, Jordan. I see you found him for me.
Captain Sabaya, meet Ishmi, Cairo's foremost occult specialist.
Please, I am only an humble sand divine.
Yes, of course. I only wish to ask you your purpose in visiting the Cafe Tambourine this afternoon.
Yeah. Tell Sam what you just told me, Ishmi.
What? I told this man nothing, Captain Sabaya.
Hey, wait a minute.
About the visit, Ishmi.
I was not at the Cafe Tambourine.
Jordan, what does this mean?
He's lying to you, Sam.
I know nothing. This man just now came to my table, but I was in no mood to read this.
Oh, you little... Wait a minute, come back here.
Let him go, Jordan.
Sam, you get away. He's got plenty to tell
you. Sit down, Jordan. I will find him when I need him again.
I don't figure you.
Jordan, why did you not tell me that Diana Carrington was Sheikh Abbas Ali's wife?
Say that again, Sam.
Diana Carrington is the wife of Sheikh Abbas Ali.
How's that possible?
Apparently, the Sheikh did not always stick to his caravan. And also, you did not tell me that Diana was once a dancer in Casablanca.
I didn't know, Sam. Believe me. Listen, did you check Sheikh Ali's body?
It is gone. There is no trace of it or his caravan. And I do not fancy digging up the entire Sahara Desert to find him.
But it doesn't... Wait a minute. Hold everything, Sam. Supposing that wasn't Sheikh Abbas at all. Just a dummy.
Jordan, I have talked with both tribesmen who brought you in. They say it was the Sheikh.
Well, don't believe them.
And at the moment, I am not inclined to believe anyone.
You going someplace, Sam?
Yes, it is very late. I would advise you to get some sleep, Jordan.
Why?
For you, tomorrow may be a very busy day.
I sat there trying to figure my next move. I picked up the big menu Ishmi had left in his haste, the one with a handsome picture of Asa's symbol on the front cover. Then I took a pencil and tried to make like a London detective, writing down all the elements of the mystery. Sheikh Abbas Ali invites me to his tent. I'm a convenient witness to his death, also a suspect. His body disappears. The crystal blonde who took me there turns out to be his wife, which means that he'd been leading a double life. Scramble that all up with an Egyptian sand diviner, and you end up either cutting out paper dolls or doodling. So I doodled. Yeah, that made even less sense. Then all at once, it made plenty of sense. I had the answer right in front of me. I grabbed the menu, did a fair imitation of a 10-second man out the front door, caught a taxi, and in 14 minutes flat, I arrived at the house of Diana Carrington, the widow of Sheikh Abbas Ali. Diana had given Sam Sabaya her address at headquarters, and I remembered it. 305 Danya, in the foreign colony. Well, quite a layout for the wife of a devout wanderer of the desert. By rights, I should have gone right to Captain Sabaya, the Cairo police, but this was too good. I wanted to see Diana.
Why, Rocky.
Hello, Mrs. Abbas Ali.
All right, you know. You killed my husband.
Let's talk about it.
No, Rocky, not here.
Sure. Well, maybe you'd like to call your 2 sand fleas in again.
They're gone. What are you doing here?
Looking for your husband.
He's dead and buried, thanks to you.
It's a fine act, Diana. Now go into your dance for me, minus the veil and the grease paint.
Why,
That was a great show, Diana.
Very well, I admit it. Abbas Ali had a sense of the dramatic, I suppose. It was I who danced in native costume in his tent. He told me to.
Keep going.
That's all. I returned to the tent, and he was dead. You had killed him.
Now listen to my story, Diana. Stop me if I'm wrong.
Better get out of here, Rocky.
Not until I show you this menu with a picture of Asa's symbol. Does it look familiar?
Why, I... What?
I'm quite a doodler, Diana. I drew a beard on him. All right, have a look. It's not George Bernard Shaw.
What's all this nonsense?
With a beard, Asa's symbol is a perfect double for Sheik Abbas Ali.
All right, what about it?
Asa's symbol told me he had a twin brother. Was it Sheik Abbas Ali?
Why, what difference does it make?
I thought so. While Asa's symbol became wealthy here in Cairo, Abbas Ali lived out in the desert with his caravan.
He chose that life.
But Abbas Ali started slipping when he met you. After he married you, he had to find a way to support you.
He loved me.
Sure. So you both dreamed up the whole idea. I was to witness the death of Abbas Ali, then he'd disappear. Only it wasn't Abbas Ali.
But you saw him.
And I might have been fooled. I should have known when I bent over him and smelled the ether. The ether from the spirit gum that held on his false beard.
You'd better forget it, Rocky.
All Abbas Ali had to do was shave off his beard, put on his brother's clothes, and suddenly he's the wealthiest Mr. Asa symbol, and nobody's the wiser.
Abbas, he knows.
I should have been smarter. I was standing with my back to the hall drapes. A hand reached through from behind and again held me in midair. It set me down and turned me around. But this time it didn't let go.
Now, Rocky Jordan.
You nicked your chin with that razor, Abbas.
Diana, you will leave the room.
Do it quickly, Abbas.
Go at once.
Hurry, Abbas. Hurry.
More dramatics, Sheik Abbas Ali?
Death is not for the eyes of a woman, Rocky.
Got plans?
Rocky, you were my friend.
Yeah.
I liked you, Rocky.
Take off the record. I've heard it before.
Friendship is a rare thing. It is regrettable that it must end.
No, I don't like it either. Listen, Abbas.
Asa's symbol is dead and buried in the desert.
Only beard and all, huh?
He will never be found. And neither will you.
That's the way it is?
Yes, Rocky, my friend.
Okay. We might as well make it interesting. I suddenly jerked myself away from him, made for the door. He was big, but he was fast behind me like a panther. I had hold of the door latch, and I came up with both feet. Bounced off the big Bedouin like a rubber ball. His huge hand caught me across the face. I landed head first in a pile of chairs and mirrors. I swung a chair from the floor and caught his shins.
Kill him! Kill!
He lunged, kicked. I took the first one in the ribs, rolled away, and was up again. But only for a second. The next time I came up slowly, ready for anything. He stood there looking at me in surprise. Then he took two steps. Sagged and dropped hard on his back like a spread eagle. The peculiar scroll of a knife handle stuck out from his chest. Like a wart on an egg. I spun around, and there in the open French window stood Ishmi, the sand diviner.
I am most angry, Mr. Jordan.
Yes, so I notice. Thanks, Ishmi. Too bad you had to kill him, but thanks anyway.
I did it not for you, Mr. Jordan. I had been wrong.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Where is Miss Carrington, his wife?
Oh, she'll keep. Sam Sabaya is sure to be along any minute.
I do not fear the police now.
And I'll tell Sam you did it to save my life.
I had much greater reason. This man killed my faithful employer. My trusted friend.
Hey, wait a minute. You know this is Abbas Ali?
Yes. I know everything.
That he took Asa Symbol's place? How'd you figure it out?
Figure it out, Mr. Jordan? Well, that was not necessary. Remember, Effendi, I have the gift. With the gift, it is very simple.
Oh, now wait, don't tell me yet.
Yes, Mr. Jordan. I read it all. I read it in the sand.
Rocky Jordan is presented from Columbia Square in Hollywood and stars Jack Moyles in the title role. Tonight's story by William Fifield was edited by Gomer Kuhl and was produced and directed by Cliff Powell with original music by Milton Charles. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Radio Detective Story Hour. I'll be back next time with another drama of suspense.